The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine, Thursday, the 31st of August 2023. It's the last day of meteorological summer, and it's a wet one, but the first weekend of autumn is going to be really quite pleasant. It's all very exciting, isn't it? I hope you're all very well this morning, and I hope you all got out safely for work and school, or you're all tucked up at home, or you're already at work, or whatever your situation may be. I'm just glad that you're with us here on the 9 till noon show. We're here for the next 3 hours, keeping you informed, entertained, and updated on everything that's happening across the region, across the country and beyond. Later on, our farming expert, Paul, not farming, he's probably a farming expert as well. I've tasted his spuds. Later on, our gardener, Paul, will be in the studio answering your questions. So if you have any questions for Paul, getting in touch with us nice and early as well. That and so much more besides. The lines are wide open for you right now. You can give Caroline and Niamh a call on 07491 25000. That's 07491 25000. Or you can WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. I mean, Lee, chat before nine about the mega summer cash draw here at Highland Radio. It all wraps up tomorrow. We've got €12,500 to give away, €2,500 on the naughty alarm clock, €10,000 on this programme at around about 11:30. Now, the nature of us is that we leave things to the last minute, don't we? So there shall be a rush on tickets tomorrow for those that want to be in both draws, of course. And that's fine. The website can accommodate all of that, but some of you might prefer to give us a ring or call in, right? So if you need, if you're going to do that, if you want to be in both draws, you probably need to be getting on that right now. I get my tickets online anyway, just in case your internet goes down or something along those lines. Highlandradio.com, you'll see the banner there to buy the tickets. It is for fun, and it's only if you can afford it. €10 per ticket. You get an extra ticket for 50, an extra two for 80. So if you want to group in with other people and increase your chances, that's completely up to you. On the website, really simple, safe and secure. If you want to give us a call, the number 07491 25000, we can process your card, again, safe and secure over the telephone. And if you want to call in and grab your ticket the physical way, call up to us here, Mountain Top, Letter Kenny. But as I say, that's during office hours, and if you want to do that, I'd suggest you do that today. Let's look at the front of a busy Thursday morning of newspapers. The Tyrconnell Tribune, as you'd expect from John, we had the benefit of his knowledge on the show yesterday, and you can read it in today's paper. 14 shiny new seats, 4 more constituencies, increased numbers on the election register, and plenty more clangers in Wednesday's Boundary Commission report heralds a new era in Irish politics, but obviously not in Donegal, where there was no roll of the dice to come up with the magic number of 6 deputies in the next Dáil. Significantly, the Boundary Commission has said it was time to start the conversation about whether constitutional reform was required to address the issue of the increase in the number of TDs due to the constitutional position that there must be one TD for every 20 to 30,000 people. Now, bottom line, this is that can be changed, and I think the appetite is out there for it to be changed. I would expect they start considering and discussing that. Now, it's locked in for the next general election. Nothing's going to change in that regard, but moving forward. More election analysis from the Donegal Democrat. Councillor Barry Sweeney believes the decision to keep a population of more than 9,000 from Donegal within the constituency of Sligo-Leitrim has effectively ruled out the possibility of him running for higher office in the Dáil. And that's, it's not just a case for Barry Sweeney. That means effectively that Ballyshannon, Bundoran, Pettigo, up to Lahey, Ballintra, Rosnara, all of those areas will be officially represented by a TD that may be based in South Sligo. Well, anyway, reading on, it also would not encourage locals to run for office with little chance of success. The other county councillor from the area, Councillor Michael McMahon, added, in a review of the constituency boundaries, the Electoral Commission announced on Wednesday that there would be no reintegration with the rest of the county as a 6-seater constituency was not allowed for the next Dáil Éireann elections. Now, that is not at the whim of the Electoral Commission. They can't say yes, right, 6 seats. That's a law situation. So it's the government that needs to change that. And members of smaller parties and independents are going to say, well, why would they? Because this current setup and the way things are being decided seems to suit them really quite well. On to the Derry People Donegal News. A popular swimming event due to be held last weekend in Rathmullen was cancelled due to high levels of E. coli in the bathing water at the beach. Swim Ireland, who organised the annual Inch Mile Swim, contacted participants to say that in the interests of safety, the event was being rescheduled. The decision followed a detection of elevated levels of E. coli, which was flagged during routine water sampling conducted by Donegal County Council. So the obviously it's good to see that the system works, but what is causing that pollution? I think most people have a fair idea. The Derry News this morning. Derry City and Strabane District Council's decision to host the Waterside Half Marathon every 2 years instead of annually as part of a cost-saving exercise has been described as shameful. The council revealed this week that the event will now alternate with the Strabane Lifford Half Marathon every year, with 2023 the last year that both events will take place together. It means that in 2024, the Strabane Lifford Half Marathon will take place in lieu of the Waterside Half Marathon, which will then return in 2025 in place of the Strabane event. Is that something that you have an opinion on? Let us know. 086 60 25000. Very important, depressing news in the Irish Daily Mail today. Child mental health services are on the brink of collapse due to staff burnout, leading to unsafe services in some areas, a damning review has found. The Mental Health Commission published 9 further reports today into the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service, known as CAMHS, for each community healthcare area. Last month, an overall report found children are subject to a postcode lottery in getting essential mental health care. Dr. Susan Finnerty, the review author, said after her inspection, she could not provide an assurance to parents that their children have access to a safe, effective and evidence-based mental health service. Okay, so a person who's responsible for reviewing the CAMHS service made this statement. She could not provide an assurance to parents that their children have access to a safe, effective and evidence-based mental health service. That is shocking and shameful. Sligo, Leitrim, Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan, they are grouped together as Community Healthcare Organisation 1. Some of the findings as it relates to those areas: serious concerns around the management of clinical files in one team, which brought a risk that children would be lost to follow-up care. The review found there were no electronic clinical files for teams in this area. No electronic clinical files. One team's facilities were cramped with a waiting area on the corridor, and it was dark and dilapidated. So that would be what people would see in our area in some instances when they went for that CAMHS care. On to the Irish Times this morning. Congratulations to everyone out there. If you achieved your goal, your ambition as it relates to CAO offers, and hopefully as well, if hopefully you got sorted for accommodation and stuff. It's a stressful time for everyone. It's a joyous and wonderful time as well when everything goes well, but there's an awful lot of challenges at the moment. But hopefully you're out there, got exactly what you wanted. If you didn't, thankfully we do live in a time where there are different pathways to achieve your goals now. But almost 6 out of 10 CAO applicants have secured their first choice college courses this year. It's an increase on last year when just over half did so. A total of 59% secured a first choice, up 5% on last year. 85% received one of their top 3 course preferences, up 4% on last year. CAO entry points reflect supply and demand for individual courses as well as the grades achieved by applicants, so most coming out with what they wanted, but that doesn't of course take away the situation for those who didn't. Let's go to the Irish Independent now, and fewer than 1 in 6 of our children are meeting the recommended physical activity guidelines of 1 hour of moderate to vigorous activity per day, new researchers found. So fewer than 1 in 6 children are meeting those recommendations. Just 15% of children are getting the required amount of exercise, 23% of primary students and 12% of post-primary students. The figure is an increase from 2018 when 13% met the guidelines, 17% of primary and 10% of post-primary students did as well. I mean, obviously now we're heading into the winter, should there be more of that physical exercise in the school? We hear all the while how it's good for people's physical and mental health. It's hard to meet those criteria as the nights draw in and the mornings are dark as well. The Irish Farmers Journal this morning. Farmers could be paid for the carbon they capture and store on their farms. New carbon farming legislation received the green light from the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee on Wednesday, clearing the first political hurdle in Brussels. It'll see a framework put in place for the certification of carbon storage on farms and establish a carbon trading system. Now, let's go to the red top tabloids here. If you're a VHI customer, and we have a low uptake of private health insurance here in Donegal, but if you do have VHI, unfortunately, it's another bill that's going to go up for you. VHI has revealed it will increase health insurance premiums by 7% from October. The firm said the rise is due to inflation and a significant increase in demand in healthcare as a result of the pandemic. VHI has over 1.2 million customers. It's the second hike they faced this year, with premiums rising by 4.8% in March, having dropped by 3% in 2022. What typically do you pay for health insurance? Like, how much is it per month, I wonder? Because then you sort of think how much that might be. Someone out there will let us know. For an average family, how much is it? I should know, of course, but I don't. 086 60 25,000. More news on RTE suffering its slump in payments. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. RTE has recorded its biggest weekly fall in licence payments as numbers collapsed from 14,394 to 8,615 for the end of this month. So I would say lots of people here in the Northwest haven't paid their TV licence. I think we are a rebellious county. I think we sort of think for ourselves. We think outside the box. We don't mind taking a stand. I wouldn't be surprised, and it'd be very interesting to see a county-by-county breakdown if, you know, the figures are even greater here in the Northwest. Well, the 5,779-person slump in renewals or new purchases represent a 40% fall and is in danger of leaving a black hole in the broadcaster's finances of up to 50 million. And it's kind of a little bit of a strange situation we find ourselves in that many of you out there are in protest saying, I'm not paying that money anymore, stuff that. But we do end up paying anyway because they're going to get a huge bailout, probably 50 million, if not more, in the budget in October. So whilst we're talking there about mental health services for children, that 50 million, 60 million, this is not our fault, you know, would probably go some way to addressing some of those issues. It's actually instead going to be paid to people like Keith Duffy to go and get his teeth done or go and do a documentary about getting your teeth done in Turkey. It's a crazy old world we live in. Lastly, in the Irish Daily Star, what would you say or who would you say are the fans most likely to leave matches early across the Premiership now? This is an English story, really, a British story. It doesn't focus on LOI. Well, Manchester United, many people may not be surprised. Their fans are most likely to leave a game early, followed by Arsenal, Man City, Tottenham and Chelsea, Everton, and in sixth place, Liverpool. Wolves fans, they hang around longer than anyone else. Sheffield United, Nottingham Forest, Newcastle, Luton, Burnley, Brentford, those are the most loyal fans to stick towards the end. So it seems if you're used to success in sport, the team, was Roy Keane right about the prawn sandwiches? If you're used to success, you're less tolerant of a defeat. Arsenal ranked second, followed by current champions Man City, in a survey of fans who honestly said what they really thought of so-called part-time supporters sneaking out before full-time. Almost a quarter of fans admitted leaving a game at least once early last season. United fans were voted the earliest leavers, but have also had the longest second-half stoppages from this season, data showed. Okay, whatever that proves. All right, then. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after the break. Let us discuss Airbnb and its impact in County Donegal. Derek Nolan is head of public policy at Airbnb Ireland, and hopefully he can join us now. Good morning to you, Derek.
Very good morning, Greg.
Good to have you on the programme. Okay, so Airbnb has been crunching the numbers, and what does it mean for the Irish economy?
Well, thanks, Greg, for having me on the show today. So what we did was we handed over our data for 2022 that Airbnb would have, and we handed it over to a group called Oxford Economics, who are an independent economic research unit, and we asked them to give us some details on how those people who stay with Airbnb, how those people in Donegal, for example, who share their homes or share properties, and how the impact that has on the economy and what it means for communities across the country. And what we saw very interestingly and was a surprise to us was that a big shift has happened in where people are choosing to stay. It used to be the case that Dublin was the hotspot, whereas we're now seeing a huge dispersal of tourism from the major centres to places like Donegal. And it's having a big impact on the community in terms of money being spent and jobs being created. And in fact, Donegal was one of the biggest beneficiaries of this. We saw that in 2022, guests who came to Donegal spent 38 million euro in the county. And that was on the back of what we call guest nights. So how many people stayed in a place for how many nights. And that was on the back of 379,000 guest nights. So that's people coming to Donegal for those nights, spending 38 million euro in 2022. And then that created approximately 550 jobs. So for those of your listeners who are listening to us today, what does that mean? Well, it means that about 550 people who are working in Donegal today, those jobs are on the back of tourists coming, spending money in coffee shops, in craft shops, in tourist attractions, on boating excursions and so forth. And that's having a very positive impact on the Donegal economy, keeping people in jobs, but also making sure that Donegal gets its fair share of the tourism economy that, you know, particularly in rural and regional Ireland, is so important to communities and so important to livelihoods.
In terms of its contribution to the overall tourism market, in terms of, you know, people's stays here, do we know the breakdown there, you know, hotels, you know, different types of accommodation, and where Airbnb accommodation sits in there?
So on a kind of a national level, we would know that Airbnb accommodation accounts for about 6% of all guest nights. Now that would be bigger outside of Dublin, because obviously there's a lot more hotels in the larger urban centres. What we've seen is that Airbnb gives the ability for villages that don't have hotels, areas that don't have guest houses, to kind of have, you know, two or three Airbnbs can make a huge difference to a local shop or to a local pub. Or to a local cafe. So we're seeing that kind of dispersal of tourism. We're seeing that particularly a big figure, which I have to say I was even surprised by. So 10.5%, so like one in 10 of every euro spent by an international tourist is spent by a guest who stays in an Airbnb. And that's where you're starting to see what we call that kind of high value spend. Mm. So your tourists who come for longer, it's their big trip. So they're coming over from maybe the States, or they're coming over from Europe, and they're staying a while, and they're what you call your high value spenders. So they're spending a lot of money, and we're seeing that, almost three quarters of that spending is coming from that cohort, which is really good quality spending in terms of, you know, they're spending a while, they're in the community, they're not just coming for a night and leaving again.
Do we have any idea nationally? I wouldn't expect you to have regional figures in terms of properties on Airbnb's website. My notion of it when it all first started was people sort of, you know, renting out a room in the house. But what is the sort of makeup of it now in terms of, you know, houses versus part of someone's property versus a converted shed at the side of a house or something, you know, and I mean fancy, I don't mean just an old shed, don't get me wrong. But do we have an indication as to sort of the makeup of the accommodation that's provided through Airbnb in Ireland?
So we ask our hosts when they're putting a property up to put up two choices. One is to say, is it a room in your home? In which case they click a private room. Or the alternative to say, is it an entire property? An entire home, we call it. An entire home encompasses, as you say, Greg, it encompasses someone's holiday home that they're not using at the moment and they put up on Airbnb. Someone's own home, which is becoming increasingly popular, which they put up on their property for a few months of the year that they know they can make some money and they're going on holidays themselves or they're going away. As you say, a big one, chalets, converted barns, granny flats that have been turned into really good bespoke accommodation. In rural Ireland, yurts, tents, and even on our platform, we have bespoke hotels, and B&Bs use our platform as a good way to market. So we have all of that different contribution in terms of, but because of how we classify it, we don't know whether it's, you know, a converted barn or what it is.
It's just either a whole property or it's okay, I get you.
Exactly, that's how we classify it.
Now obviously, the in vogue thing to do at the moment is to sort of compare the amount of Airbnb properties available in a region or a county or a country versus the long-term rents. Now, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I mean, I don't have any skin in the game, but this is people's private property that they're working hard for, they're investing in. It's up to them. I think most people might agree, or maybe they don't, to do with it what they will. It is their asset, not the government's asset, nobody else's asset. But do you think it's fair, or what is your take when sort of the amount of properties available on Airbnb are compared to the amount of long-term rents that are available in a particular region? Do you think that's fair, or is it comparing apples and oranges?
I think I'd go with the latter on you with that one, Greg, that it's apples and oranges. The first thing I would say is that there's a kind of an assumption that one Airbnb is one long, that could be is should be one top long-term rental property. And as I've just outlined to you, that's not the case. A lot of people do this seasonally, and they share a room in their home, or they share a converted garage, or they share, you know, a flat, a segregated part of their house, or it's their own holiday home. One of the big things we would see in the likes of Donegal, you know, where it's so beautiful, and Irish people have had a tradition of having, because it's just so beautiful, of having a second home in Donegal, is that when they're not there, they put that property on Airbnb. So it's without fail that family, often with, you know, connections to Donegal, you know, maybe would have been they lived there originally and had to move out, that property would be guaranteed booked for a month during the summer when the kids are off school, mm-hmm. When they go down to see the parents, always booked at Christmas, always booked at Easter. And in the time when it's not booked, then they put it on Airbnb and help to pay the bills for that one. And then you have the other kinds of, you know, converted areas that simply aren't suitable for long-term rental. Some properties are only suitable for use during the summer. So you do have that mix. So I don't think it's fair to compare the two.
But we don't know. Say, for instance, the government were able to heavily regulate this area like they have tried to, but I believe at this point that's being overruled by the EU. We don't really know, do we, if Airbnb were completely made illegal, for an example, how many long-term rental properties may then become available? Because obviously there are lots of people actually exiting that market because it can be quite a difficult one to operate in.
I think you're right. I think, you know, when I'm on shows like yours and a public discussion, you know, the housing discussion often comes up, and I think it's an important one to discuss. The first thing I always say is, you know, people sharing their properties in Airbnb is not the cause of the housing crisis. You know, it's certainly not, is it? It's not. But there is a kind of a concern that people want to know is if there are rules in place around housing and what you can use your property for, that they're being followed. And I think there is a sense that in some cases that isn't always what happens. There's two questions really that I think need to be asked. And I think this is particularly pertinent to Donegal, which is, as I said in the figures, probably one of the main beneficiaries of guests staying on Airbnb and probably doing the best in terms of jobs and spending and getting the benefit of the tourism euros. How do you balance that with people's concerns about housing? So the first question is, who should be able to do Airbnb? And the government hasn't really settled on that yet. There was a kind of talk late last year about everyone requiring planning permission. There's talk of new planning guidelines being required, because I know that there's people in Donegal who will say, yes, we've got issues with housing, but we've also want to make sure we keep the benefits. So how do we get that balance right? So one is, what are the rules? And I think we're waiting on the government to come back with some guidelines on that, particularly as it relates, as I say, to rural Ireland. And the second thing then is, once we have those rules in place, how do we make sure they're enforced? And that is something that I think the government is working on. As you say, Greg, there was an issue in Europe last year where the government was asked to hold off on that. And what the government is essentially trying to do is what every other country or city or state in the world that has regulated short-term rentals has done. And I just want to say, we support them doing this, is to put in place a registration system. So those who can do Airbnb and are supposed to be doing Airbnb are on this register. We have a way of knowing who they are, mm-hmm. and therefore whether we should let them on the platform or not. And that will allow, I suppose, people to know that, well, if you're on Airbnb, you should be on Airbnb. And if you're not supposed to be on the platform, you're not.
Okay.
But I think the big thing is to find out and get that balance right, because it really matters to the 550 people who are employed in Donegal as a result of these tourists. Getting that balance right, we're protecting those jobs and looking after housing concerns. And I think that's a discussion that's very important to have.
Yep. You're listening to Derek Nolan, the head of public policy at Airbnb Ireland. Thank you very much. Stay where you are, if you don't mind, Derek, because we're bringing into the conversation now a Donegal councillor, Micheál Colm Ag Eileann Asperg, who's been vocal on Airbnb in the past and has been waiting patiently to have his say on this. What is your view? And I suppose, having listened to Derek, Micheál, has your view changed in any way, shape or form?
Imagine why did you, Greg, because imagine why did you, Derek Foster. is Gromaig Funyan Jesha. Look, it's interesting. Caroline sent on the report to me last night. As you know, I'm not the best of readers. I did try to go through it a wee bit. I certainly welcome, and it's good to get a breakdown of figures and where things are at in terms of Airbnb in the county. It's good to get that data and the footfall, the spend, where roughly they're going and that. But like, first thing I would say is Derek's 100% right. It's not the Airbnb's fault that we have homelessness, and that's without a shadow of a doubt. That lies solely with government's neoliberal policy in terms of looking after the interest of landlords. And when I say landlords, I mean the bigger end of landlords. I'm not talking about maybe my neighbours who have a house that was maybe well to them. But there is a discussion that has to be had around Airbnb. There is a discussion that has to be had around tourism in the community that I represent, is an Gaeltacht, Gaelic-speaking community, socially and economically deprived community, a community that is forced roughly from 17 to 18 years of age, right on up until you're near your 60s, are forced to emigrate to the four corners of the earth, unfortunately, which leaves us with a very quiet place during the winter. And that itself has a social impact on our community. But I do think that there has to be a strong discussion around the impact of tourism and Airbnb that it does have in our community. And yes, housing is one of them, but it's not just housing. There's also the impact in terms of the cost, the rising cost that a tourist destination brings to the local community, a community that's born and reared here, that has no skin in the game, as you said yourself, Greg, earlier. So it costs us, when you become a tourist hotspot, it costs us that extra 20 pence on your pint. It costs us that extra fiver on your meal. It costs us colossal amount of money when you don't have your own land and you watch your own children, who hopefully will stay at home and doesn't or hasn't to emigrate, who can't afford to buy land. Because we can't afford to buy land, because what we're seeing is that people from maybe Belfast, people from overseas, people from Dublin, Cork or Sligo or whatever, are starting to invest into a cheaper housing market and then renting that a house, because it's an investment, out to Airbnb.
And what is wrong in them doing that? That is their money. They might have a distrust of banks. They might not trust pension funds. What is wrong with someone going out, breaking their back to earn money, buy a property, do up a property or whatever, and then rent that out on an Airbnb? It is their property. They can do with it what they want. What is wrong with that?
Well, if you look at people who break their backs day and night when they have two or three jobs and they're trying to keep a mortgage or barely pay a rent with the high cost of it, and then they can't see their children being able to buy land because of tourism. And it is...
Yeah, but that's because of a lack of investment. Is that not a lack of investment from central government in that, ensuring that we have decent road networks into the west of the county, that we have decent broadband infrastructure, that IDA do some site visits in the county and try and get some businesses in here, that we have a local authority that is building affordable social housing, that we have mortgage companies that are fair, that allow people to borrow at decent rates and to build properties, that we change planning laws so that you can actually build on your own land rather than having to see if there's another property local before you can actually do that. I mean, there's a million and one things that a government needs to do to support and enhance rural Ireland. It can't surely come down to the fact that someone wants to do with what they want their own property, i.e. rent it out to Airbnb.
No, look, with the discussion here that I've been invited to participate here with Derek Nolan is around the report report that they released there this last day or two around Airbnb. As a local councillor, I feel obliged that I have to say that not everything's rosy in the garden when it comes to Airbnb. And again, I am not opposed to Airbnb, absolutely not. I use it myself at different times, and I see my own friends coming from different parts of the country or abroad, and they use Airbnb. So I'm not opposed to Airbnb. What I am struggling with massively is the lack of conversation that we're having in terms of how tourism affects our community. like I says, and I outlined earlier on, a socially and economically deprived community who has vast immigration forced upon us. So tourism, as a council would see it, as an industry and a business. Yeah, they see this as a one-one situation for tourism. Let's pump as many tourism into Western Nicaragua. Our beautiful, beautiful islands, our beautiful culture and our language and heritage, and the terrain that we live in, from Añárigo to Ilhéu. But the difficulty I'm having is that we're not having a discussion and a proper constructive discussion around the other aspects of tourism that we do see and hear often from maybe Europe, from the heavily tourised areas, and say the likes of Catalonia or the Basque Country or maybe in Cornwall. And it's interesting to read some of the reports that's coming out of Cornwall in terms of holiday homes and Airbnbs. And that is not a community that I want
I want to come back to you, but just before you probably move on to another point, I want to come back and sort of see what Derek Nolan sees Airbnb's role in all of that. Derek, you may agree or disagree, maybe even agree with much of what Micheál Colom is saying, but I mean, what do you think? Do you think Airbnb has a role in in creating the problems he talks of in a rural area?
Well, I think first of all, I actually admire Micheál Colom's passion. You can just hear the concern about his constituents, and like that's always something to be respected. And I actually think that what Micheál Colom is talking about is very valid, and is a discussion that's happening all over Europe. As you said, the question is, tourism comes and people spend money and they create jobs, and that's good. But there are questions in spots all over Europe about over tourism, and it, at a point where it gets that tipping balance where the good and it isn't worth the cost, as they say. I'm not in a position to judge. I don't live in Donegal. I go there a lot, but I don't live there. So as to I'm not on the ground living, trying to make earn a crust, as they say in Donegal. So, you know, as I did say though earlier on, it is that question of what is the balance. And I think that's a little bit to what Micheál Colom is actually saying, is what is the balance? What is the point at which we say that there's not enough? And I think when it comes to Airbnb's role, and I should just say for the point of your listeners, and I know Micheál Colom and yourself, Greg, knows this, but Airbnb is a platform. The properties are owned by people in Donegal, or people who have a property, who were from Donegal, or, you know, have invested, as Micheál Colom says. What is that balance and how do we get that right? And I think that is a very valid discussion to be having. And just what I like about what Micheál Colom has said, and I've discussed this with politicians in the past, and you often get one Airbnb is one Airbnb two is too many. But what Micheál Colom is saying is, how do we get the balance right? Because he says he's used it and he sees the benefit of it. And I think that is a discussion that is very worthwhile having across the tourism sector.
Micheál Colom, though, you're quite closely politically aligned, though completely independent of Thomas Pringle, Deputy Thomas Pringle. He has said he would tax Airbnb out of it effectively and incentivise people to switch these properties to long-term rentals. And you know, really, as frank as that, he says tax them out of it pretty much. Are you of that mind?
Well, first and foremost, I can't speak for Thomas.
No, I did draw a strong distinction between the two of you.
The operative word here is independent. And yes, I do work closely with Thomas on a lot of stuff, but Thomas can speak for himself. But for me, where the difficulty is, and I'm not exaggerating this, I got a message on my Facebook page from a mother of four young children this morning. And I'm not exaggerating that I was really absolutely moved. And the message basically is that she felt she failed as a mother, which, if she's listening, you have not failed as a mother. You're a fantastic mother. And I've been working with the local housing authority here tirelessly to try to house that them four children and the mother and the partner. And the difficulty is that we can't get houses now. We can't get long-term housing. And I'm not putting the blame on Derek, and I'm not certainly putting the blame on individuals who have been willed a house and they're trying to put three or four children through college themselves and they're really struggling. But what I am really struggling with is the fact that you can pay up to €2,000 a week for Airbnb now in Donegal. And that has a roll-on effect that those that might stay in the long-term rental market has increased the value or increased the rented cost to such a price now. Mm. I saw a house in our own area lately there for long-term rental for nearly €400 a week. Now, my time working away from home, both in England and other parts of the county, your rent would have been roughly around less than a day's pay or thereabouts. We are now forcing people in our community, a community that our wage base is one of the lowest in the Free State, who, if you work in a factory, you're taking home about 400 to 500 quid a week, roughly. You're not going to get much better than that. We're asked now to pay over a half of our weekly wage towards rent. And that's not talking about the high cost of fuel and electric and goods or food and all that there, and school and cars and insurance and all them other things that we all know about. And that's only after happening when the tourist industry, when West Donegal was marketed heavily, an area that we talked, look, Greg, how many times have I been on your show talking about, come from Derry, you're an hour away, you can have sitting in a pint, you can be sitting in Tessie's pub drinking a lovely pint, or over in Cashanore or wherever, eating beautiful lobster or steak or whatever your preference is. And I'm not against tourism. I travel a lot myself. But it has a roll-on effect, and we can't deny it, and we need to have an open discussion around that there.
Yeah, for sure.
So the idea, let me finish on this, please. Sorry, briefly, please. Sorry, my apologies. But the idea that we're paying now hundreds upon hundreds of euros a week just to rent a house, where 2-3 years ago, your average house was around about 400 euros a week to rent. Even at that, it's still expensive. But now they're looking for 1,200 quid, they're looking for 1,200 euros a month, 1,500. Personally, and I know I'll be criticised for this, but I don't really care. That is immoral for me.
I'll just say one thing.
We have a duty to make sure that our communities function well and we look after those less well off.
You also have to factor in that many of the tourist areas that you talk of now have had all of or half of, 60% of their accommodation taken away by the state to house refugees. It is probably the likes of the Airbnb sector that's kept some of these places heads above water at all, and cafes and takeaways and treks and all that stuff. Because if it was down just to the public sector, there's many places around Donegal that would have seen no trade because there was nowhere for anyone to stay, because the state decided the best solution to an accommodation crisis for refugees was to take hotels out of the equation. Dylan, come in there. I'll come back to you.
Are you asking a question?
No. It was more of a rant, but if you want to answer it, go ahead.
But I'm a bit fond of a rant myself. But yes, look. First thing, I'd like to state very clearly that refugees are welcomed in our community. I think they're a great addition to our community. I think that there has to be a discussion around the long-term accommodation for people from other. They're not refugees; they're human beings, and I don't care if you're from Palestine.
But there does also need to be a wider conversation about balance. You're talking about the balance of tourism and local communities. We do then have to have a broader conversation about the balance between an increased population and services, etc. If we're going to have all these conversations, some are probably going to be more popular than others.
Yeah. An interesting talking to Taylor yesterday, just in relation to this, and it was a very kind of brief conversation around the people from other countries who had to seek refuge due to NATO and, you know, our own support to the Western capitalist countries when they invade and destroy other countries in the interest of power. That it's interesting that they were saying, look, as a hotelier, she was saying that it's very difficult for me to compete with an Airbnb down the road where my room is €80 a night. I have to employ night staff, kitchen
Understood.
Staff,
okay.
You know, management, da-da-da-da-da. And then the Airbnb outbids me and I can't compete. So this is one of the reasons why hotels, they're saying...
Of course, and then you might have a restaurant who's next to that hotel who can't compete with the restaurant in the hotel. Okay. It's a competitive market. Yeah. Dylan, you've made that point really clear. Dylan, a quick word from you. I beg your pardon. Dylan, I'll come to you in a second, but I want to free up Derek. Derek Nolan, do you want
to
just...
Sorry, I'm just going to have to go here because I'm just heading to work. But,
Dylan. Say what you have to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, just the point I'm going to make there is that, I understand where Michal is coming from in regards to Airbnbs having, in some ways, some negative effects, but the reality is that without Airbnbs, rural tourism would be a non-issue because most of the rural hotels are taken up with refugees. And that's, you know, I can understand that as well. I don't have any issue with refugees being taken in. But the other key issue here is that Micheál is not addressing is the fact that for the last 10 years, we've been fully aware of a major, major mica issue in Donegal. There's about 1,000 houses in the council's own stock which have mica. And the council has not built anywhere near the level of social housing that they should have built over the last 10 years. And on top of that, they won't correspond with tenants who are raising queries about what is going to be done or what are their plans to rehouse the tenants of the council houses while repairs are being done. What is their plans? So maybe Micheál wants to speak about that rather than going on about the average individual, you know, renting out a room in their house. Like.
Okay, I'll let you get on to work. Dylan, sure, you can listen to the answer on the radio. Thanks for that. Quick 30 seconds on that, please, if you don't mind, Micheál Colum.
No, not one bit. And I have great empathy for anybody that is left in the situation that they are in terms of mica. And I do believe that the government, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, have flip-flopped around this deliberately and not willing to actually address the real issue that the people who see themselves in their homes, and that's what they are, is their homes. And that's very unfortunate. But I'll be very blunt and very honest with it. And the community that I live in, we don't seem to have the same level, nowhere near it, as the rest of the county. So I'm slightly removed from it. And I'm not making an excuse. I'm more than happy to meet any community group, individuals, or anybody at all in any part of the county whatsoever. But that's something that I don't work with on a daily basis. And I hear some of the other colleagues who do work with it on a daily basis. And I have to say, without sounding patronising, my heart and soul absolutely goes out to anybody that watches their homes being crumbling around them.
We need all of our councillors from wherever they are in this county and all of our TDs from wherever they are in this county to be all over the mica issue, because you might not have it now, Micheál Colum, but it certainly could come knocking on the West's door in the next year or two. Yes. I don't think it's an issue we can be parochial on. But listen, thank you very much for your time, Micheál Colum, as always. Interesting conversation. Fair play. And lastly to you, Derek, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there, some that's completely outside the remit of Airbnb, but I mean, obviously it's clear from your comments that you've an understanding of sort of social issues more generally. The last minute to you.
Well, thanks very much, Craig, for having me on. And it was very interesting to hear some of the comments and some of the on the ground information. I suppose what I would say just in, you know, as the purpose of us giving this information was so that we could inform the debate and we could inform the discussion and people could know what the impact was when they're discussing it. So I think we've helped to achieve that today. And just to recall some of the figures, you know, 38 million euros in spending. There are 550 people working in Donegal today whose job depend on people spending on Airbnb. If there was a factory with 550 people in Donegal that was suddenly threatened with closure, or, you know, there would be a huge uproar. And I think we just have to, I think, keep those figures in mind. And again, to agree again with some of the comments on Micheál Colum, it's about the balance and how do we make sure that we look after the good and don't throw out the baby with the bathwater in any of our attempts to get things right for everybody.
All right, thank you for your time this morning. We'll be back with more after a break. Okay, we've received loads of comments on that last item. I simply don't know what people's views are, and that's what's great about this program. Programs like this is because we have a convo and then we get straight into what you actually think. I'm going to read a couple because we ran over a little bit, so I have to take another ad before the news at 10. Airbnb moved into the house in our estate recently, and I have to say, despite the uproar from neighbours that it would be nothing but party after party, you wouldn't know they were there. There have been no issues with them at all. They're filling a gap in the market, and right they are. No regulation should have to live beside them. Five in the vicinity, all night parties. Where are Airbnb then? Don't start me on the lack of guards. Well, that's the flip side. Okay, that is something I didn't consider. Spent five nights in Cork Airbnb for €580 for a family of seven. Was going to cost €700 for one night in a hotel in Galway. A no-brainer for me. I am one for Airbnb. Another, hi Greg, hotels are just getting too expensive in Ireland to stay in. Taking your night stay, drink and a bite to eat, you're talking about €600 for one night. Phone one hotel for this Saturday night coming. €300 for myself and wife. Just too much, thanks, they say. Micheál Colum and Thomas Pringle are barking up the wrong tree, saying Airbnb houses should be given to our poor. Those houses represent some people's only income. Why aren't they talking about tourism hotels and lodges being given to Ukrainians instead of tourists? The whole system is geared against helping the local economy and people are trying to make a living. And I'm going to come back after 10 with loads more of your comments. Stay right where you are. We've a very busy couple of hours on the way.